This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The TV version of the show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. As we continue our special coverage from Las Vegas of the third and final debate between the two major party presidential nominees, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, we'll hear now from those progressive voices left out, the Green Party. The Green Party of Nevada organized a protest called Occupy the Debate next to the campus of the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, where the actual debate was being held. And I spoke with some of the attendees, including the campaign chair of Jill Stein, David Cobb. Special thanks to TruthDig.com for sponsoring my trip.
Let Jill debate!
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 I'm David Cobb. I have the honor of being the campaign manager for Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka.
So we are outside the campus of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, on the evening of the third and final debate. Why are you out here? What is your message to those who are inside?
Well, Sonali, I'm here because the people are here. I'm here because our voices are being locked out. I think it's really important that we acknowledge that we are at the site of a corporate-managed, corporate-controlled debate process. Remember that the Commission on Presidential Debates is actually a private corporation created by the Democratic and Republican parties, literally designing a process to prevent alternative voices from being heard, and the American people not only have a right to choose how to cast their ballots. Jill and Ajamu not only have a right to have their voices heard, but we the people have a right to hear alternative voices. We have a right to hear that there are actually candidates willing to call out the fundamentally racist, sexist, and class oppressive society that we live in. We have a right. We have a right. We have a right to hear that there is a candidate calling to abolish student debt and provide a free public education for all young people. We have a right to hear a candidate calling for a plan to transition away from coal and oil and fossil fuels onto sustainable alternative energy. We have a right to hear from candidates that actually have a vision for a completely different world.
So the argument, of course, is that if Stein were polling at 15% or higher, she would be let in. What's your response to that?
Well, Sonali, I think it's worth pointing out that according to the corporate media's own resources, Donald Trump has received $3 billion worth of free media. Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party has received about $2 billion worth of free media. They have literally gotten 2,000 times the amount of coverage than Jill Stein and the Green Party. Let that sink in. 2,000 times the amount of coverage. I submit to you that it is an intentional effort to prevent us from being able to poll. Did you know that 57% of the American people want an alternative political party? Did you know that 3/4 of the American people want to see Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka in those debates? Here's the point. The polling is done without even mentioning them as candidates. So it is a disastrous catch-22 that is preventing alternative voices from being heard.
So you're saying that when people are asked who they would prefer as presidential candidates, Stein's name is not on the list?
That is true in many of the polling that is done. It is only recently that they've even listed either Jill Stein or Gary Johnson.
Now, the Green Party candidate this election has gotten much more media coverage than in past years, perhaps because of the similarity between the Green Party and what Bernie Sanders was saying and him making it mainstream. Or perhaps it was just because the two current candidates are just so equally, you know, heinous, or, you know, one would argue equally heinous, others would say slightly differently heinous. But have you noticed any correlation between her poll numbers going up and increased media coverage in at least specific instances?
What we can tell you is this. I think it's important to recognize that in 2000, Ralph Nader basically ran without the Green Party existing. And thanks to him, one of the most famous people, one of the most respected people in the United States, got about 2 million votes and basically created the Green Party. I think it's important to recognize that in this election cycle, the Green Party in this political moment has created the opportunity for Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka to rise up. They were not famous before this election cycle. This election cycle is making them famous. I think that's really important. The second thing I want to underscore is that what we have found is when people find out about Jill Stein and the positions that she takes, they like what they hear. Our polling numbers reflect that we have got somewhere between 2 to 3 million people who are willing to literally stop wasting their votes on the corporate-controlled two-party system and invest their votes in a movement for significant social change. Imagine if we had a voting system that instead of forcing people to vote against the candidates that they hate the most, you could actually for the candidates that you wanted. A ranked choice voting system. I submit to you, we would have 10, 20, maybe even 30% of the vote right now.
And I think in Maine, voters are deciding on such a thing. Voters themselves are deciding on a future voting method. And there may be ranked choice voting in Maine in the future.
Sonali, I'm so glad that you brought up Maine and Issue 5 in Maine. It's important to recognize that Issue 5 was actually brought forward by the people themselves as an expression of anger at the failed two-party system. So the Green Party is working with progressive Democrats, principled conservatives, people across the political spectrum on ranked choice voting, just as we're willing to work with people for proportional representation. At the end of the day, the question is, are we going to actually have a society that reflects the values of peace, justice, democracy, and ecology? Because I want to be clear, this notion of alternative political parties does not get enough discussion in this country. I want to give you a list of what it took for so-called alternative political parties to champion at the ballot box and ask who is championing this today. Here's the list: the abolition of slavery, women getting the right to vote, the creation of the Social Security Administration, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation laws, pure food and drug laws, ending child labor, the direct election of the United States Senate, the 40-hour work week. The fact of the matter is the entire fabric of what we today consider the bare damned minimum for a just and compassionate society, that society was literally woven together thread by thread, strand by strand, issue by issue, by people who were third-party activists. The Free Soil Party, the Liberty Party, the Abolitionist Party, the Socialist Party, all of these parties did their work when they were called naive and unrealistic, who did their work when they were called dangerous un-Americans, and who did their work when they were called spoilers. So we say today, we want to live in a world, not just talk about, but live in a world that will end war as foreign policy.
Speaking of the issue of women voting, some Trump supporters want to repeal the 19th Amendment because so many women do not like Trump that it's mostly men who are voting for Trump. And Mr. Trump has brought is apparently going to be bringing out the debate today Barack Obama's half brother. How devolved have our debates become? The second part of the question is, if Jill Stein were allowed in the debate, how might she be able to bring such an issue poor debate back on track?
First of all, let's just acknowledge that what passes for the debates, the last two that we've seen, have been so much sound and fury signifying nothing. What we saw was posturing. What we saw was a sort of a hatefulness. I mean, really, is this really what our choices are? We choose either from the sexual predator or the economic predator? Because that's actually what we're talking about here. And what we do not hear is actually campaigns around what is the vision for America. How are we going to deal with patriarchy? How are we going to deal with capitalism? How are we going to deal with imperialism and white supremacy? See, these structures, these meta processes in which we're dealing with, these are never even discussed, much less brought to the table. So what Jill Stein would do would be to actually talk about the need to completely restructure our society, to actually have social, political, and economic systems that actually are peaceful, just, kind, and transition into a different way of living on the planet. That's actually what Jill Stein and the Green Party would represent.
Do you think that if Trump wasn't the GOP candidate, that the email leaks from WikiLeaks exposing Hillary Clinton's Wall Street, cozy Wall Street relationship might really have been more of a news issue than it is today, or if it had been brought up during the primary race?
So there's two things there. Let's actually back up. Number one, the reality is that Bernie Sanders did not actually lose the Democratic Party's nomination so much as it was stolen from him. And I think that most Sanders supporters actually recognize that. There was a series of decisions made by the leadership of the Democratic National Committee to basically undermine Bernie Sanders at every step. Why? Because Bernie Sanders represented something that was in opposition to the Wall Street-controlled, corporate-dominated Democratic Party. I think it's worth pointing out something, and that is this, that the leadership, principled progressives and liberals have been lied to and sold out by the ruling elite of the Democratic Party, who are taking their money and their marching orders from big banks, Wall Street America, and the 1%. But there's something else that needs to be said. Principled conservatives have been lied to and sold out by the ruling elite of the Republican Party, who are taking their money and their marching orders from the same damn corporations, Wall Street executives, and one percenters. Imagine this. There is an opportunity for principled liberals, conservatives alike, black and brown and white folks, to actually come together to say, we can't let the ruling elite separate us anymore. It's time for us to actually represent our commonality and recognize that we, the people, are actually united, and we need to unify ourselves, and that's actually what we're up to. I want to actually go back to this. The fact of the matter is that the only reason that Hillary Clinton is not completely imploding because of the information exposed about the Democratic National Committee and WikiLeaks is because Donald Trump is a obscene, outrageous sexual predator that has admitted as much, and he is imploding before our very eyes. We have the two least respected, least supported candidates in modern American history. This is the moment that we tell folks, stop wasting your vote on this failed two-party system and invest your vote in a movement for real change.
Yes. Thank you so much, David Pop.
Thank you.
My name is Minister Stretch Sanders. I'm the founder and president of All Shades United. I'm a supporter and I guess you could say a member of the Black Liberation and the Black Power movement.
You're wearing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. Does that make you part of the movement too?
I'm a supporter of Black Lives Matter as well.
And yourself?
My name is Trey Terry. I am supervisor of information for All Shades United. I'm here for the people just to represent and explain to people that there is another option.
What is All Shades United?
So All Shades United is a solidarity revolutionary organization of five races, which is the red, brown, black, white, and yellow. The white and yellow is supposed to use their platform and privilege to fight oppression that the red, brown, and black community face. The brown and black and red community is supposed to fight for freedom, justice, and equality, and we use the yellow and white branch to support that effort. So we are a revolutionary group that use revolutionary principles to revolutionize the world in the way we want it to be and to bring effective change by using revolutionary change and principles.
What does revolutionary change look like to you in our context today? If you were to sort of bring this up to a mainstream audience, they might look at you as if they don't really understand. How do you explain it to somebody, you know, for whom the word revolution might be a little scary?
Revolutionary change for me would be taking money out of so many things and putting people in it, starting to use compassion and love and me being somebody who is a minister and a man of the cloth, using love to help those who are on the street and not using terms like homeless or feed the homeless, but serve the people and those without homes and stop letting everything be so money-based. The revolution I also want to see would be not when people hear revolution, they think, oh, I'm like a physical thing. But revolution is just an act of change. The revolutionary is the person that's doing the change. So for us to deal with the real root of racism and really deal with what caused that, and racism is associated with capitalism, you know. So once we can get rid of the racism, that'll stop the class structure that's dividing us. So the revolution I would like to see would be using those principles of love, peace, and unity to bring those things. But without love, you won't have peace. And without peace, you can have unity. So that's pretty much our position.
So, Trey, why do you support Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka?
I don't particularly support Jill Stein. I'm here for the people. I feel like we have Trump and Hillary, and they're not the best choices. So I would just like to acknowledge the fact that there is someone else for young voters that are looking to vote. It feels like we're trying to pick either Trump or Hillary, and there is another option. So just awareness of another option.
And why is Jill Stein a better option than Hillary or Donald?
I personally can't speak on why Jill Stein would be a better option. I just want to bring up the fact that there is another option for people to research and to do their own research and just find out, you know, that there are different avenues.
For me, I'm with him. I'm not supporting a particular candidate, but I don't necessarily support Jill, but I do support in the same token. So I support so far what I do know she stands for, but I don't consider myself Green Party, but I support the people. And if the people, if this is supposed to be a people's party, then I'm going to support it. So we're people first. You know, we don't really get caught up in parties or organizations or individualism. If it's a productive and a positive approach, that's what we support. So today we're honestly here just as members and servants of the community that want to just show our support. And as my comrade said, there's another option. Those two options we've been utilizing since this country was founded, it hasn't got us far, especially people of color. So it is another avenue we need to be taking if we see that these two lanes are not getting us the results we want. So it's nothing wrong with looking into another avenue. Individuals in this Green Party reached out to us as far as just to show some support. And once I did my research, just with how basic principles, take money out of the politics and start really using money for the people and put the people back in and let this country really be all power to the people. That's what we live for, which is all power to the people. So if that's her message and that's our message, then I'm going to support that. So I'm not necessarily supporting her as a candidate, but I'm supporting her as a person, as an individual. Because at the end of the day, being a politician don't make you no bigger or no less. But we think that be a politician, it's so, oh, he's a politician, you know, so it's like she's a person before she's a politician. So I support her as a person, and based off what she stands for, we stand for. So
15 minutes.
Hold on.
So there are a lot of issues in cities like Los Angeles, New York, Charlotte, Baltimore, around the things that in particular affect African-American communities and police violence. What is the situation in Vegas for those who live outside the city? Your police cars say working with the community or something, I guess, serving the community.
Yeah, no, serving the community. It's police terrorism in this city as well. It's just Las Vegas lives by what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and that's even within the city limits. So a young man named Keith Childress Jr. was assassinated by Las Vegas Metro December 31st, 2015. And we've been supporting his family, working with that situation to bring justice to his situation. About a month ago, they found that the officers killing him, it was justifiable. So, and it's over with. Now it's done deal. It's clean and swept under the rug. Now they're waiting on the next person to be assassinated. So that's how Vegas works. And because people don't know that, when you don't have the education, you don't really know what to be upset. You know, so the people organized the rally July 9th at the MLK statue on the other side of town to have a visual to stand with those who lost their lives and their family. And we highlighted, Keith Childress, one of the guys that we highlighted it. And after that situation was over 500 people. After the next day, everything died down. So we have a tendency to get so in the moment, but because we don't have the education, we don't continue to try to dig deeper. For us, it's bigger than just police terrorism. Police terrorism, that's just a crop, you know, of a major foundation. That's just a branch of a tree. So for us, Vegas has a huge racial problem. They used to call this the Mississippi of the West, you know, so we understand that the racism in Vegas is just more low key. If it's exposed, tourism will stop, the traveling will stop, people across the world that come here faithfully, that will begin to decrease. So it got dusted under the rug, you know. So it's here, definitely. Trayvon Cole, Charles Bush, who was strangled by the officers back in 91. So it's situations here. You just have to do your research and your homework.
So for the first time this year, it feels like the issue of police violence in communities of color, in particular the Black community, has entered the debates, the presidential debates. It's been a question that's been brought up during the presidential debates. That's, in my memory, not happened in the past, recent past at least. Why do you think that is? Is it because of movements like Black Lives Matter making this a national issue that finally, even if there's no practical change on the ground, people, politicians, and the media are talking about it?
I mean, yeah, people started bringing it to the light, and social media has a way. Most of the killings that's going on, they've been in existence for years, but because it's starting to get exposed, they're being forced to talk about it, but they're not dealing with the problem. They're saying, okay, we have to get more police on the street and we have to get dash cameras, but Eric Gardner and some of the other ones was killed on camera. What I want them to discuss is you're discussing the effect, but discuss the cause. The cause for it was stop and frisk. The cause for it is mass incarceration. To this day, the officers are being trained to go to communities of color and to harass. So therefore, when you go fishing, they're trying to, you know, pull something out. So I want them to address the reason why these things are going on. It's crime and drugs in white neighborhoods. They're not killing none of them at the same rate. So it's one of those situations that they're just talking about the Black Lives Matter thing because it's a cool thing to discuss. It's a phenomenon, but it's not really the truth.
Well, Trump wants to bring back stop and frisk, and Hillary Clinton, you know, once called young Black folks super predators. Do you have any opinions on those, on what those two candidates have said? Also, Trump has been endorsed by the Fraternal Order of Police.
I mean, stop and frisk is still going on. They may not call it that name, but Mike Brown was a stop and frisk. Eric Garner was a stop and frisk, you know, just harassing, you know. So they still go into neighborhoods of color searching for guns and drugs, things like that. But the thing is, the guns and drugs they're searching for was planted by them. You know, these brothers don't have no passport, you know, so the things they're searching for was given to the neighborhoods. If you didn't have situations that built the climate of violence, you wouldn't have that problem. So my thing is get rid of the project homes and get rid of, start building more schools, start building more recreation centers, start building more things that's positive and productive to give those in the community to do, give them an outlet, another option. But when you don't do that, and then you dump drugs and guns in the neighborhood, force the Black man out the household, and there's now that family is unorthodox, you're gonna produce a system of violence, and then the same guns that they're trying to arrest them for, they're giving them, you know, so that's what we believe. So as far as the whole super predator thing, Hillary Clinton has apologized for it, but my thing is, apology had like for repentance. That means to repent, to change, to say you're sorry, but to change from that. Same thing for her apology. Okay, you said you're sorry, but you haven't acted on it. Open some of these cases about these guys that got arrested, that you call super predators, and this whole war on drugs. Freedom. You know, you got guys in jail facing life right now because of marijuana and little minor crimes. So just to say you're sorry, that's not good enough. Change, but show us change in action. You see what I'm saying? So they're just talking, but there's not going to be no action done. Even if she gets in the White House, things are going to stay the same because it hasn't been exposed. You know, you can keep talking about the effect, but let's talk about the cause. Once you expose the cause, it'll tell you why we're saying Black Lives Matter, mass incarceration, and the war on drugs. That all has a reason for that, where that came from. That's the root of it.
Thank you both so much.
To the people. Appreciate you.
You've been watching our special coverage of the third and final debate between the presidential candidates, which took place in Las Vegas, Nevada on Wednesday. Special thanks to TruthDig.com, where you can also read my latest column, which is about the debate. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at RisingUpWithSonali.com. We're also on Twitter at Twitter.com/RUWithSonali.